No. Yeah, actually, yeah. A friend of mine was camping and she got busted, and they raided her camp, and they brought her to jail for 3 days, and then she got released. But I mean, but she had to go through all the problems of going down to court and for just staying in a tent, not even bothering nobody, and I don't feel it's right.
And this was a friend of yours as well?
Yeah.
And did she say that there had been anything else involved in this, or was it simply being in a tent?
No, they woke her up sleeping. She was in a tent.
And did they say she was taken in on warrants, or did she just get a...
I'm not sure on that.
And she's still sleeping out, or...?
Yeah.
So
tonight.
It seems sort of a futile thing to bring people in, and then they're out again.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the city council has a city council subcommittee coming, supposedly meeting about this next Monday. It is not mentioned on this flyer. However, it will be mentioned on the next flyer. Thank you.
No problem.
On Don't Sleep Tonight Night, which was Monday, you said that you yourself were harassed by police, or you know people who were?
Yeah, I know people that were harassed that night by the police officers, I mean, protesting against the sleep ban, and I don't know why everything has to be like this. I mean, we get harassed for just sitting in a park, I mean, doing nothing, and they run our names, and then they find a warrant if you have a warrant, and then they take you to jail, and that's not good.
I hear you. Thank you for giving me the information again. You have an anonymous individual who wants to say something about how people get hassled even if they're not engaging in using drugs, although, of course, the most lethal drugs, alcohol and tobacco, are completely legal, in fact, subsidized, but go ahead.
Which I use now. no, but the thing is, I was not even under suspicion or doing any suspicious activity, and I was patted down the police while I was trying to perform in a zen-like manner. It really disturbed my consciousness, and I was greatly offended by the incident. That is all.
Thank you very much. So we just received a report of Officer Garner, who apparently takes some delight in harassing folks who are outdoors. He mentioned one incident where a man was taken all the way across the river, for having had an open container or something? We don't want to talk about that. But there was a situation with a bicycle, where apparently he also goes after people on bicycles, and he had this man actually stop.
I'd rather have none of this.
For publication.
We're talking to
Randy Keel.
And Randy, I may have talked about this before, but you say that the San Jose police took your vehicle, right?
Yeah, they towed it when I ran out of gas on Highway 17.
Rather than, let's say, put it off to the side where you could pick it up later, they...
Actually, it was off the side, off the white line. And the day we went back to get it, it snowed, and we went back there, and it was gone. And they gave me one of them stickers for 72 hours, and it was, like, dated on the 21st this month. And it was
before the 72 hours was up.
It was gone on the 23rd when we went to get it.
It sounds like you have some kind of a legal case if you can get somebody to do it. Of course, the problem is, you know, paying some attorney or you're doing the research yourself.
Exactly. I'm not, you know, I'm homeless. I don't have all the resources, but right. I think they need to be stopped.
It sounds abusive. It sounds like if, you know, the law is the law, it should apply to everyone. I mean, the laws are already, you know, skewed so that they're written to help the rich, but... You know, this kind of a law, which says 72 hours for everyone, should apply to everyone.
Exactly. Everybody should have equal rights.
Yeah.
And,
right. Anybody else want to say anything about free radio, the two free radio, about what's been happening on the streets of Santa Cruz? Any good things, bad things, indifferent things? Any comments?
No.
All right. Well, stay tuned. Thank you. An issue you want to bring up? Go ahead.
Yeah, I have an issue I want to bring up. My brother's girlfriend was downtown on the mall one evening, and the cops had came up to her for flicking a cigarette on the ground, and they arrested her and let her stay in jail for 3 days until they let her out.
Santa Cruz Police?
Yeah, Santa Cruz Police.
How long ago was this?
About a month ago.
And wasn't that she had an outstanding warrant for something else?
No, she didn't have no warrants at all. They just brought her in just because of the purpose of she flicking a cigarette on the ground in front of the cops saying, like, ha-ha, I guess. And then they treated her like shit for 3 days.
And, well, I would encourage, do you know the name of the cop who did this?
I believe it was Mr. Seeley.
Actually, there's a Sergeant Seeley and then there's an Officer Seeley. Is it a younger guy or an older guy?
It was the father.
Sergeant Seeley?
Yeah,
he should know better than that. And do you want to say the name of the woman or no?
No, I can't do that.
Okay, well, perhaps at some point she'll come forward and talk about it. Okay, well, I hope to see you guys tomorrow night down at New Leaf at 5 o'clock for some hot food if you're around.
Okay.
Or sometime in the evening, just come by the table at New Leaf Market where we'll be tabling. Ending the sleeping ban, keeping an eye on police misconduct, getting stories from people as to what's been going on.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. So another woman, whose name we won't mention, was arrested yesterday on an old camping ticket, which is now hanging over her still. But the real cause for the arrest was, what, riding the wrong way on her bike?
Yes, down on the mall.
I know they have there's been a lot of kind of trapping going on down there. They just have cops standing around waiting to go after people for these minor violations.
And the cops are really brutal about taking part in doing their job. I mean, they see you going the wrong way on your bike down on the mall, and I've seen kids literally getting thrown off their bike by a cop and slammed to the ground right there.
When was the last time you saw this?
I don't know, about a month and a half ago.
And have you seen it more than once, or did you see one occasion?
Yeah, I've seen it more than once.
How many times would you say you've seen it?
Twice.
Seen it at least twice. You've seen it twice?
Yeah, twice.
And was it? And you got a ticket for riding your bike
on? Ticket still standing for riding the wrong way down the street.
I'm going to call the cops and have you hauled in immediately.
About a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah. Were you riding in such a way as to menace traffic?
No,
or?
Actually, I was riding on the, okay, it was down like by the, what's it called, Metro, right? And I was riding back up. Well, I turned around in a big, like, circle type thing, and, by the New Leaf. Well, I turned around right there, see? And I jumped off to go onto the sidewalk. Well, the cop was standing there busting dudes for playing hack, you know, down by the
name. You know the name of the cop?
No, I don't know. It was that Oriental dude. I can't remember his name.
Oh, it could have been Bayani.
Yeah, the older guy.
Officer Bayani, yeah. Perhaps the one who goes around with... I'm not quite sure who this partner is.
But that's where I got my ticket. He took my name right there. Bam.
How long ago was this?
Yeah, about a month and a half ago.
Thank you. Now, you say every time you go in the mall, you get searched,
I get searched. I mean, I get harassed by the cops. I mean,
they check your arms for track?
Yeah, they check if you're doing...
Are you on parole or probation?
Probation.
You're on probation?
Yes.
You have a search clause that lets you do that?
Yes.
Do that? Is this for a violent offense or for a drug offense?
Drug offense.
Yeah, I'm not too sympathetic of probation. I think it's bullshit. I mean, I think that they use it to...
keep you in the system.
To humiliate you and to unnecessarily, it gives them a job to do, which isn't really a job. Which is sort
of whether it doesn't have to be one.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. To police ourselves, we'd be a lot better off.
Talking to Dan. And Dan, you actually have a report on something we heard about earlier. It's about 5 o'clock now. We're in the New Leaf parking lot. But yesterday, apparently, police were stopping folks down near River and Highway 1?
Right.
What was that about?
The intersection you can't even cross without when the thing turns white, you can't even get halfway across before it turns red. And I took off when it turned white as soon as it did, and they had two motorcycle cops, one on each side of the highway, radioing to two cops that were two blocks away to pick you up.
For jaywalking?
I was riding my bicycle, and I took off as soon as the light turned white. And today, as an example, I talked to a lady. I said, watch, see if you can make it across the intersection before it turns red. It turned red before we got halfway through to the center of the intersection.
You're talking about the walk, don't walk signs?
Right. Yeah, that's what
you mean by turning white.
Right. And what they had is one CHP or Buffalo or Santa Cruz police on a motorcycle on each side of the highway spotting, and then they had them waiting two blocks away to sit on the ground and pass out tickets.
How many people did you see getting tickets?
In a half an hour, close to 50 people.
And what kinds of tickets are we talking here?
This failure to make it through the intersection while the light was still in the white.
And about what time of day was this?
2 o'clock, no, it was 11:30 to 12:30 area.
In the morning and in the early afternoon.
I'm gonna show you my ticket.
Okay, we're looking at a ticket here.
And a lot of these people got them.
It's a familiar yellow ticket from the Santa Cruz Police Department. Daniel Britt. Failure to stop at red light.
When in fact I took off as soon as it turned white. And what happens, you cannot make it, even pedaling as fast as you can on a bicycle, before it turns red again.
It's a fast light.
Yes, it changes within three to five seconds, when it should take about a good 15 to 20 seconds.
And we're talking about the light that crosses the actual
Coral Street, where the Coral parking lot is, over to where they have that hot tub type spot.
Across the freeway, in other words, yeah. Or what would have been the freeway if you go further on down.
Right. And I started at the Coral Street intersection, trying to make it to the other side, to where they have Stapleton's and that on that side of the street.
Sounds like Santa Cruz business as usual, Dan.
Right.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that this happened to you.
Yeah.
And
can we time the light somehow to prove that there's no way of making it across?
I imagine somebody could. It ain't going to be me.
I mean, you're going to see a lot more of these from yesterday. They had 10 police officers down there passing these tickets off.
Impressive. And thank you for letting us know about it.
Okay.
It's 20 after 4, and we're here at the town clock with Dan Hopkins. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Now, you say that there's seems to be a squad car double parked there in front of what was the Veterans Monument, and police, I can't see them very clearly. Are there police at the foot of the mall?
Yeah, there's right now there's only about five, but earlier, all the hosts and police officers were there. In total, there was at least 10 people over there, two community service officers, and then the regular police were in there. They were all standing there guarding the mall, so that protesters will not march down the mall, because they march down the mall and a police officer, completely out of control, jumps out of his car. He actually brushed somebody with his car as they were marching, and he jumps out of the car and started pushing people, and he told them to get off of the street, but the march continued on anyway. They were protesting the death sentence and Mumia Abu Jamal, so that he won't get executed. Anyway, there was about 10 of them right there guarding the mall, and there's still five there. There was also three police officers and a motorcycle officer over at the bank right across the street behind us, and also one across the street at the restaurant. So they had this place completely surrounded with probably maybe 13, 20 officers, and then some that were milling around back and forth. I don't know where they went to. And so, anyway, it just goes to show you how bad this is getting, and they're all siding up with the downtown mall. That's what they don't want. They don't want those businessmen to know these issues. They are scared to death that the protesters are going to stop their business, which is totally ridiculous. Most of the people in Santa Cruz want to see a protest anyway, you know?
Look at some signs. Got some signs coming in.
Go ahead.
Pigs belong in the pens, not on the streets. Fight police brutality. And here's that famous Santa sign that we loved so much at the city council meeting. Get into the Christmas spirit. Jail a homeless person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Santa. Thank you. Yeah. Santa Cruz, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're talking about troublemaker Judy Moore. Judy, you're telling us some weird story about it being a $500 fine to drop off clothing at the wrong time at the Goodwill.
At the Goodwill donation sites where they have those trucks at various locations in Santa Cruz.
Right.
Absolutely. It is a $500 fine. So you want to do your duty and be charitable or get rid of your clothes, whatever the reason. And you're giving, this is going to go to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
They're getting all this stuff free
from
the Goodwill. And it's a $500 fine to drop anything off that's meant to go to the Goodwill if it's not within the hours that they're open.
Well, that's Cynthia Matthews, Time, Place, and Manner. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh, you're welcome.
And Judy just handed me a First Alarm Security Patrol card, which has Tony Dutra's name, number 420, who apparently told you.
It's his handwriting.
What did he tell you?
He said that because we were standing in front of the words, metal words, Metro Center, and where I just gone to that little store inside to purchase something to drink, and three of us were talking about some of the unjust laws and codes. He straightened up like a policeman, and he said that he could call the police on us because we were loitering there in front of the word Metro Center. Unless we had business to do at the Metro, and you can verify this. All you have to do is talk to Steve Argue, because he was present at the time.
The guy who's running this protest.
Yes. So, I mean, this guy was really says...
Put down your phone now.
I said, I beg your pardon, but I'm standing on the sidewalk drinking...
Sign our petition, folks.
Is it citywide, or can I sign our petition?
You can sign.
But these young guys that have these big aspirations to be policemen and get a person in trouble for any reason, they're the dangerous ones.
I agree,
for
Judy.
Our future.
Thank you, Judy. We're going to call you the Hat. What's happening, Hat? Anything on the streets we should know about?
Just the fact that, like, the cops are coming down, and they're, like, harassing people for, like, not doing anything, just for, like, looking suspicious. Like, they'll search people, and there'll be nothing on them, and they'll be like, oh, well, you can go free, you know?
When was the last time you saw this?
2 days ago.
And where was it?
Downtown in front of the metro. Like, and they're always harassing people in front of the metro.
And we're talking young people, old people, any particular kind of person?
They harass the ones that are, like, young and, like, say for me, like, with spikes or, like, looking dark, whatever, or hippie.
Right. So. And are people... I know that they busted 3 people for marijuana yesterday. I saw that on the mall.
Yeah.
Are people resisting? Are they interested in standing up to this stuff, or are they pretty much intimidated?
Actually, it's kind of weird because the kids downtown that are all macho and buff, like, they're like, yeah, you know, we got balls, but they don't, because when the cops are around, they, like, try to run away and hide, and they, like, make comments like, the cops are doing drug sweeps, I'm leaving town.
Uh-huh.
It's like, all the people downtown think they're all macho, like, put their tail between their legs and run away and hide.
Have you been subjected to any police harassment yourself?
Yeah, actually, I'm 19, and the cops wanted my ID, and I said, it's up at the college. So they said, put your cigarette out. So I said, okay. Well, I was hanging out from the needle exchange. I wasn't, you know, exchanging needles. I was talking to a friend. Cops come up in a paddy wagon, which they're not even supposed to come to the needle exchange, because if they come and they intimidate people from coming to the needle exchange, HIV and all that stuff, you know, sharing needles is going to, like, get bigger because people are going to be scared to go exchange needles. So the cops come over and they say, well, I wanted to see your ID. I said, you know, it's up at the college. And they said, well, you know, they thought that I was saying I was a college student. But I wasn't. I was just saying, you know, it's at the college because my friend was up there. And the cop's like, you're a liar, you know. I'm smart, you know. I've been in the system for a long time. I know when you're lying and all this stuff. So I show him my ID, and he's like, well, okay. He was writing my name down. I was like, why are you writing my name down? He's like, because I want to, like, keep on record, you know, the people who lie to me. And so he, like, wrote down
my cop?
I don't know. I didn't get a name.
He was a Santa Cruz police officer?
Yeah, it was.
Right. If that happens in the future, note his name and give a call to either the radio number or the number 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and let us know what's going on. Because they have no right to even ask for your ID in any kind of demanding way. You can refuse it. You can say, I don't have to show you my ID unless you you say, what crime are you investigating?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
And we interrupt this series of interviews, which actually happened about a month ago, right after the demonstration for justice for Mumia Abu-Jamal and against police abuse and the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz at the town clock, to get a phoned report from who?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is the V-Man here.
It's the V-Man. Go ahead, V-Man.
I just wanted to let listeners know, particularly people who live in the downtown area, that the Downtown Neighbors Association will be meeting Thursday night at 7 p.m. January the 14th in the Loudon Nelson Center at room number 7. Now, the reason I wanted to let people know about this meeting is one of the items for the agenda of the meeting is a possible weakening of the no camping ordinance. And I would like to stress for people who live downtown who support ending the sleeping ban as it now exists to go there and make their voices heard, because I believe this Downtown Neighbors Association is against weakening of the section 6.36.010 Santa Cruz Municipal Code.
They want to keep arresting people for sleeping.
Basically. I mean, they don't come out and say it in so many words, but if you read the Downtown Neighbors News, it's like it just goes on and on about how the new city council is currently studying the possibility of adjusting or even lifting, oh my God, the existing no camping ordinance, which prohibits overnight camping. And mainly their concern is one of the things they list here, unfortunately, this is the way that they put it, unfortunately, a significant amount of illegal drug activity witnessed by Laurel Park neighbors has originated from car and van campers on our streets in front of our homes. And I, you know, it's more scare propaganda to me when I read this kind of stuff. And it's just simply not true, and it's just simply, like, it affects so many more people than just, you know, people who may be dealing drugs and using drugs. I mean, there's all kinds of people end up out on the streets, and we need to have compassion for these people is what it really comes down to. And I'm planning on attending this meeting as well, since I do live downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a downtown neighbor, but you know, I would like to urge people that live in the downtown area to come to this meeting and voice your
concern. Again, where and when is it?
Again, it's happening Thursday night, January the 14th. That's this coming Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Loudon Nelson Center, room number 7. And I think it's important for people to have a counter opinion to the downtown neighbors. I mean, based on what I'm reading in this flyer, they fully support leaving the camping ban as it is.
Well, I think the key point here is, I mean, I think this business of going after drugs is horseshit anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Let's assume it isn't, and let's assume that there are hard drugs that you want to at least control, if not abolish the sale and distribution and use of. That has nothing to do with sleeping, and those are two different items. I mean,
exactly.
It sounds like you're using it as a pretext to go after people that, because they look poor, maybe you assume that they are selling drugs or using drugs, or maybe you just don't want them around, period.
Right, exactly.
You know.
And if they're worried about drugs, let's start with getting rid of the CIA.
Well, not to mention the tobacco and alcohol industries, which kill more people in 1 week than these drugs do in 10 years.
Yep.
So.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, or letting me call, Robert.
Sure.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And they have to give you some specific, particular facts about what they're looking for. They don't have to have probable cause, but they have to have some reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
And that has to be based on the fact that a crime has been committed.
Mm-hmm.
So, or that that a crime is about to be committed. So, you are being messed with.
Being what?
Messed with.
Yeah, definitely. Like, all the time. There's no end to it. I have a problem with cops, but I wouldn't. Because, like, in Vermont when I was homeless, I didn't have a problem with them because they, like, looked at us as equals. We were homeless, but they, like, hung out with us. Like, they talked to us, you know, even, like, bought us food every now and then. The cops down here, they're up on their, like, high little pedestal, and then we come along, and they're, like, looking down on us like we're shit. I don't know if I can say that, but...
You can.
Okay.
Particularly if it's true.
They do, because it's like, I don't have a problem with cops, except when I came out here, I met, like, one or two cool cops out here that, like, look at me as a human being and, like, on the same level. Uh-huh. But, the two cops I met talked to me like I'm a human being. The rest of them talked to me like, you know, I'm lower than them. And that's why I have the problem with them.
What's happening with Needle Exchange? Our police... We were concerned earlier this summer that they were trying to crack down on Needle Exchange, censor literature. How long have you been in town?
I've been in town 4 months, and when I got into town, I actually started getting into heroin and using. I've now quit, but during that time, the cops sit there, they have, like, undercovers, like, standing there. And the day that they drove up, I mean, I was, like, totally clean at this point, but when they came up in a paddy wagon to Needle Exchange had just got there, set up their stuff. Everybody had their dirty rigs, couldn't go exchange them. And the cops come up and start asking everyone, do you have dirty rigs on you? Do you have dirty rigs?
When was this?
This was like 3 weeks ago. Like.
So they're still harassing Needle Exchange?
Yeah.
Where was this?
Over behind the drop-in center. And the people came out and said, you know, what are you doing? You aren't supposed to be here. You know, I'm going to have to like talk to your like...
Superior.
Yeah, the superior. And so they finally left. They sat there for a while and then they finally left. I had my 16-year-old friend with me, and, like, the cop came up, and they're never worried about our health. They straight up came up and said, wow, you know, you don't look too healthy like you did, like, 2 weeks ago. Why do you look so sick and unhealthy? And it's like, what? They didn't care about our health before. We're sitting in front of Needle Exchange, and all of a sudden they're worried. They're not worried. They're just trying to put a few bucks on their paycheck when, you know, they can bust somebody.
I'm not even sure it's that. It may be a kind of just plain malice toward Needle Exchange or a directive that they should harass Needle Exchange to drive the drop-in center out of the downtown. We had thought that had ended because the progressive faction supposedly won the city council election. But in fact, if this is 3 weeks ago, that was after the election, and they're doing the same thing?
I don't know. They don't like Needle Exchange. They want to drive it out. But they're doing more harm than they are good. Needle Exchange, yeah, okay, great. You know, people who use heroin and, you know, needle drugs, go exchange their needles, and it helps keep their, you know, keep them supplied with like that. But at least they're, you know, using clean rigs, and they're not infecting each other and all of that. At least
elementary stuff that even the national
harm reduction.
Right, exactly. That the national organizations and even the federal government agrees with. Vinny, you've been on the scene here. We're talking to Vinny of Free Radio. We're told here by Sam that the it's not Sam. What's your name?
Cat.
Cat. I know it was a one-syllable, three-letter word, but I wasn't sure what it was. Cat tells us that 3 weeks ago, paddy wagon pulled up in front of Needle Exchange and began trying to intimidate them. Have you had further reports of harassment of Needle Exchange?
No, nothing recent, but it's been an ongoing thing, and it comes from the directive of the DTA, from what I understand.
Downtown Association.
Yes, correct, the Downtown Association, under their new direction of Mike Vasquez or something, or Peter Eberle, I don't know, one of those two.
So it's still happening, in other words. According to what Kat is saying, it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends, like, when I'm now, like, getting into a living arrangement, but when I had friends who were sitting there, like, trying to, like, stab, like, needles that had, like, no point to them into their arms because they needed, like, as the street kids put it, their medication. Uh-huh. But they were too scared to go needle exchange because the cops were, like, all over, and so they were, like, using these needles they've been using, like, for, like, 2-3 days. And, like, I mean,
How long ago was this?
This was, like, 2 weeks ago that I was hanging out with friends that were too scared to go to the needle exchange.
So the effect of the paddy wagons has been to force your friends who are using needles into unsafe use of needles.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but they're scared to go to the doctors because they don't want the doctors to know that, like, they're shooting up, and their arms are, like, all messed up. I mean, there's a 16-year-old girl who has, like, she doesn't know what's wrong with her arm. It's all bruised and bumped and bubbled up, and she can't go to the doctor because she's scared of them knowing, and she can't go to the needle exchange because she's worried about the paddy wagons.
Does the needle exchange know about this?
No, actually. I don't think they have been informed.
You should tell them. You should go in and say, you know, I'm not necessarily going to give you any names, but this is what's happening. Be advised.
I think that's a good idea. I haven't been around there very much because since I quit using myself, but now since you mentioned it, it would be a good idea.
It also gives you a position of greater security because you're not using, that you can do so without being with less threat of arrest, I would think.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Kat.
No problem. Have a good day.
So it's about 6 o'clock. We're down here in front of the Jamba Juice talking to
Crazy Jay.
Crazy Jay with a sign, pigs belong in pens, not on the streets, fight police brutality. Interesting looking sign. You say that you got a ticket from Officer Headley, who is inside Jamba Juice.
Yeah, it was pretty pathetic. I went to New Leaf Market just to get some food, and proceeded to get that food with the money that I had, and went outside and sat down and started eating it. Next thing I know, I got a spotlight on my head with this cop telling me to get the hell out of there, and I didn't really understand what for, you know, so
when
I was like,
this?
It was about a month ago.
And what time of day was it?
It was at night. It was like just after dark.
And you were sitting on the sidewalk?
Right in front of New Leaf.
And you were eating the what you just purchased in New Leaf?
I told him that. I was like, I just bought this. I'm eating it, you know? And he's like, you know, get out of here. And I was like, whatever.
He used the words, get out of here?
Yeah. He was like, move on, get out of here.
Uh-huh.
And,
did he say why?
No, he didn't. I was like, what the hell for? And he like peeled out and like went around the corner and parked right in the middle of the road, obstructing traffic and everything, and come stomping over and proceeded to write me a ticket. And I was like,
or sitting on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I was like, what am I going to get a ticket for? And he's like, it's illegal to sit under a window in Santa Cruz. And I was like, I didn't see a sign anywhere. I didn't see a sign
and
on the wall. He didn't tell me that. He just told me to get out of there, like harassed me, put a spotlight on my head, you know, even though there was enough light to see me, you know.
I see.
Just total harassment.
Any witnesses?
Yeah, there was all kinds of people out front. I don't know their names, but...
Because you may need them in court if you want
to
challenge them.
I already went to the... That's the funny thing. I went to the courthouse to fight it. Or I went to just go talk to someone to find out when I could go to court and fight all that. And it wasn't even on record, so
well,
either...
If you have to wait 2 or 3 weeks before it shows up.
Well, he said, like, it was supposed to... I waited, like, it said 10 days on the ticket,
right.
And I went there, like, 2 weeks later, and it still wasn't on record, so maybe it went through, but, I mean, it was definitely after the time, like, the limit that they said.
You got to watch out because they may pull you on a warrant anyway.
I see what you're saying.
Now, also, you can complain about this to the Citizens Police Review Board, which meets Monday through Thursday, 9 to 1 p.m., at 915 Cedar Street, which is about 2 blocks from here. Does that interest you? And again, we're talking to...
Yeah, this is Crazy Jay.
Crazy Jay.
Yes, that's me. And, yeah, definitely. I guess I should go down to court and find out if it's actually went through or not, because I figured dumb motherfucker probably just didn't even put it through.
What is the fine? You're standing here on the avenue, Pacific Avenue. I guess it's the head or the foot. I can never tell which. I'm not sure. But anyway, we're down at one end of it near the town clock. And you were at a rally. I guess the first rally was about in protest for a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yeah.
And the second one had to do with the rights of homeless people to sleep at night and, I guess, end police harassment of poor people on the streets.
Yeah. And I got there kind of late. I just wanted to go down there and support it, you know, just, like, be present and hold up a few signs on the street corner for people to read and maybe have something sink into people's heads, you know, because I think most people really don't even realize it, you know. They just got... It's got their eyes and their minds set on getting a Christmas present, you know, and they don't see the homeless people sitting on the street. They don't see the cops tackling people and taking them to jail. They just see their presence, you know, and they just go home and watch their TV and they forget all about, like, you know, the cold reality of what's going on, you know.
Are you a man who sleeps outside?
I sleep in my van. I'm lucky enough to have a van, you know.
Have you been ticketed for that?
No, I haven't. I've been harassed. Hassled? Been harassed a couple of times.
Recently?
I guess the last time was about 3 weeks ago.
And
yeah.
Are you parking within the city limits?
Yep.
And are you parking in a prominent place that you're likely to be seen?
I parked in front of my friend's house. I parked right in front of my friend's house and got harassed there, even though my friends were totally fine with me being there.
What did the officer say when he or she arrested you?
They just told me that one of them told me, well, actually, I got both the times I got harassed was because someone in the neighborhood called in, and that's a pretty popular thing because, like, there's a lot of uptight people around here that are afraid of people sleeping in their vans. Like, it's some kind of, like, prelude to disaster, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a person that sleeps in their car is not as good as a person that spends copious amounts of money on renting a room, you know? Mm-hmm. So both times I got harassed was because someone in the neighborhood...
Did you have to move, or you just questioned, or what was
One time I moved just, like, about 15 feet away just in front of someone else's house, and I never was harassed there again, and, until that neighbor complained, and then I moved across town in front of someone's house that I know, and that way it was cool, because as long as you have permission from the people in front of the house that you're at, you're usually all right, unless someone complains, in which case this happened a few weeks ago, and I walked around the neighborhood to find out who the person was, because they didn't come to me, they didn't even know, they didn't do anything, it's like classic case of someone just like being too lazy, and
anonymous.
Just, yeah, anonymous, letting the police take care of their, you know, responsibility as like a member of the community, you know, so I found out who it was, and I talked to him, and I haven't had any trouble since.
You talked to him? Did you attempt to intimidate him?
Oh, no, I just walked. I walked around to find out, I was just with the question, you know. I was just like, "Hey, I'm Jason. I'm the neighbor. You know, I'm living in this house right here, and I got harassed by the cops. And it was an anonymous call, and I was just wondering if you guys might have had something to do with it. I mean, like, no intimidation at all. I just wanted to talk." And
what was his response?
I finally found the person that started acting like they acted like they were the ones that called, like. But in the end, I ended up blaming it on someone else that said that they didn't call the cops at all, so it's really hard to say who the hell called, and I don't really care.
They were nervous about acknowledging.
Oh, I'm sure they were, you know. I mean, and I was definitely not intimidating. I was, like, being a friendly neighbor, you know, because a lot of the reason they called the cops was because there was trash around the neighborhood, and it was from some party that happened, like, the week before, and some other kids did it. And, like, since I'm living in my van, I guess I'm, like, the target for... like various kinds of scapegoating, you know.
Well, what kind of changes, Crazy J, do you want to see downtown and in this town that you think would be effective in turning things around here?
I think we should clean the streets up a little and, like, get all the cops off the streets. That's what the signs are all about. It's about cleaning up the streets and putting the cops back in the place where they need to be, you know.
Well,
like,
where do they need
really
to be?
Protecting people, you know. You know, real crimes, you know, rape, assault. Murder, robbery.
Enforcement of the downtown ordinances,
yeah.
Like sitting, like putting your foot on a planter, like...
Yeah, things other than sitting under windows and putting foots on planters and conversing with other people downtown, which...
Hacky-sacking without a permit.
Yeah, because that's what the, like, to me, that's what the streets are all about. The streets are for people to meet, play music, socialize, and these days, all it's about is having cars drive around and people buy expensive trinkets that, you know, usually aren't good for anything.
And on the line with us, we're going live again here on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I'm live!
On 96.3 FM, is none other than that man about scan, David Silva.
Very alive and kicking. Yeah, I ran down to the library to see if I can look at the city council agenda, and the library wasn't quite open yet, and I thought I'd get home. So I can't make my city council report, agenda report, but, you know, be there or be square, because you know they always vote on something that spends our money.
Well, I do know that there is an item for those who are listening, yes, on the afternoon agenda. And the afternoon session will start early. Instead of at 3:30 on Tuesday, the 12th, it will start at 3. And the second item on the administrative agenda...
A very important item.
The second item has to do with police, whether Catherine Byers, I should say, whether the city council majority's determination that police should ticket only on complaint or after a warning, which they passed on December 8th around the sleeping ban, whether that's being enforced or not. They're going to get Chief Steve Belcher to give a report. And
that request for that report included contacts.
Right. Not only tickets, but when do police actually have any conversation whatsoever around the sleeping ban with people that they, for example, might tell to move on. In other words, treat them as though they are a criminal, engaging in criminal behavior, even though they don't want to give them a ticket, because that would let the city council know and let the rest of us know that they are going after sleepers.
And of course, as you know, since you were in the meeting the other day, the assistant chief of police confessed that 50% of the time the police officers don't tell them when they leave their car. and that's against police policy.
That was
so it is a police department out of control, and they've admitted to it. Now we want to see what the report looks like.
It was kind of interesting that you talked about Vice Chief Locke, who was at this task force meeting, which we've been talking about, the City Council's task force on camping. He initially said there was no way to judge if a contact had been made. And he said that flatly. Then about 10 or 15 minutes later, when I brought up the fact that, well, I understand that there is, in fact, a computer dispatch tape made of every time an officer gets out of the car, is it not your policy that the officer calls in whenever that happens? And he said, yes, it is. That's our policy. But then he quickly added, but 50% of the time it isn't done. Does that mean 50% of the time the police don't follow other important procedures for officer and citizen safety?
Well, I think that's really important of this chief police's report. We will see not only if he is in compliance with the minimal points that were passed December 8th, but whether or not his department is in control or out of control. And I think looking at that, we'll be able to get a handle on what the real problems are with the sleeping ban. And, you know, I've contended for a long time that the sleeping ban is a pet ordinance of the police department, so they have a broad brush to just sweep and do whatever they want without having to have due cause. It's not about residents.
This is
businesses.
Between 3 and 4 on Tuesday at City Hall, for those of you who want to be at that. Plus, if you want a kind of a preview, you can come down on Monday at 4 o'clock at the ABC room where the task force is meeting, and they will be talking about similar things. And then
the ABC room is in the Civic Auditorium.
That's correct. Thank you very much, Dave. That is in the Civic Auditorium at 4 o'clock on Monday the 11th. And also on the 11th, the CPRB meets at 5:30 at just half a block, just a brisk across the street, actually, in the City Council chambers if you want to observe the official fig leaf of the Santa Cruz City Government and the Police Department. I'm sorry,
now,
go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'm calling because I'm very much concerned about in the community forum in the Sentinel today, there's an article by Robert DeFreitas. Now, Robert DeFreitas is a self-anointed, self-appointed head of the Downtown Neighbors Association who holds meetings without inviting neighbors. He did do a yeoman's job, I would say, of getting the Loudon Nelson Center, you might say, cleaned up in terms of safety for children and drugs and so forth like that. He did do a yeoman's job on that. I don't know how many rights he trampled on in the process. I have a feeling he didn't care. But if you read the article, it's from the first three paragraphs of introductions of people being shot, syringes in the sand, and all this kind of stuff. Then he goes into, so it's so unfortunate that the City Council has decided to repeal the camping ban, and he's just convinced that the City Council has done this without any dialogue during the campaign. He says no dialogue during the campaign, and that it was a total, and he makes it out like it was a total surprise to the community. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Freitas, but actually, you know, we had over 3,000 signatures. We had this the initiative drive going all last year, and about 2,000 of those signatures are right in your neighborhood association, and they will be showing up at any meetings that you try to have in the future that will no longer be secret, from what I understand.
Are you saying that 2,000 signatures in the downtown, his neighborhood association?
Oh, it looks, well, from the figures I'm getting now, and, you know, I'm working on these lists, it looks like a good portion of the signatures came from the downtown neighbors themselves, not the west side. Not the east side, but a good portion came from the downtown neighbors, maybe because we mostly were focusing on Pacific Avenue. But I could say 2,000, but, you know, let's say more than half are the actual downtown neighbors themselves. So he's in conflict with his own neighbors when it comes to the human rights violations of the sleeping ban. He's talking about the camping ban, doesn't mention the sleeping ban, and he's talking that the City Council has made up its mind about everybody's going to sleep in your yard. The typical kind of stuff that the Sentinel loves to print, and also attacking SCAN for SCAN not honestly making an effort to put this issue before the voters. I just don't know how much more he wants. You know, I mean, when we have police officers and agents and whatever, ContelPro, whatever, stealing thousands of signatures, and we have this subversion of democracy we had during the old guard that he probably endorses, and now we finally have democracy. He's complaining. This issue wasn't covered. I went to many, many forums,
David,
and that was one of the major questions that they were asked.
David, you're referring, of course, to the fact that the committee to repeal the sleeping ban lost somewhere around 1,000 signatures.
Yeah.
And you believe those were stolen?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were stolen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were stolen. And then also we had some very, very, very peculiar behavior the last couple of weeks of our petition drive, where people that we didn't know started showing up and turning in petitions and collecting petitions and turning them in without proper validation, authorization signatures. which would have put us in jeopardy. So, you know, we knew we were sabotaged, but we know that the people, you know, 75% of this city, and especially downtown, you know that the sleeping ban is a human rights violation. So we're not afraid of Mr. Freitas's lies in the Sentinel, and most people are used to the Sentinel being a format for lying. But I would like to get Mr. Freitas to come and talk. Is he going to show up at the Neighborhood Association meeting where there will actually be people showing up?
Well, I remind our listeners that this Neighborhood Association meeting will be happening January 14th, Thursday, 7 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center in Room 7. And I actually, it's on this list, this flyer I'm about to publish called Want to Smash the Sleeping Ban? Tell the Task Force. And it has about 10 or 15 meetings scheduled and then all written out for folks who want to go to those meetings on the camping ban, sleeping ban controversy.
We have some people in the Peace and Justice Commission of the Catholic Diocese who live on the West Side who are going to be holding neighborhood meetings on the West Side too. I'm firming that up tonight too. So there will be neighborhood meetings on the West Side. We were thinking they weren't going to be, so there will be some hosted. Stay tuned. Try to get that information out to people. And like I say, we've got everybody's name that signed the initiative, so we want them to show up for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just funny that, you know, after me begging for a year and a half to be able to even have a single column in the community forum, that Robert Freitas can be put in here, and he seems to know nothing about what really happened in the election. He seems to know nothing about...
Wait a minute. If you're not suggesting that the Sentinel is partial to Mr. Freitas...
I'm beginning to suspect that the Sentinel is biased on this issue.
No way.
You and I were sitting in a coffee shop the other day when we found out that a Sentinel editor had made 82 complaints about his neighbor having visitors from over the hill sleeping in their RVs.
That's correct.
Probably distorts the whole... You know, so for all we know, this whole ticket, the majority of ticket statistics may be completely twisted by the Sentinel's participation.
It's
directly
interesting that a Sentinel editor, according to the woman who's at the next table, who runs a small button business as well.
And a computer business.
She told us that she had had, I don't recall the number, but many, many complaints from her next-door neighbor was the Sentinel person regarding people camping in her backyard.
Yeah. Oh, so, even a barbecue she had was raided with five patrol cars.
Having
a barbecue in your yard.
You know, I think this shows that the sleeping ban, not only, and the camping ban, I guess we're talking about the camping ban here rather than the sleeping
ban. Let's talk
about
the camping ordinance and the sleeping sections.
Very good. The larger camping ordinance, which actually allows her to have set up a tent in her backyard if it's shielded from the street or maybe just
sort of out of view, yeah.
Out of view. You know, there are some people who don't like that idea, and I mean, that's the basis for a community discussion if there are real issues, but simply my not liking the color of your skin, your political ideology, the kind of guests you have, should not be the basis for criminalizing that kind of behavior or that kind of reality. And I think, you know, I think that there have to be, as Keith Sugar so well put it, real health and safety concerns.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, I know that editor at the Sentinel, so I'm gonna talk to him and find out, you know, what hair he has up his ass. And what's the problem? Maybe those people are loud and noisy, but, you know, nuisance is one thing, and to use the sleeping ban, you know, for visitors having a barbecue, you know, just shows how out of control this whole law is. It's a hollow law. It doesn't really apply to any bad behavior. You know, sleeping in and of itself is not a crime. I mean, how many times can we say it? But if we're going to come out of this process that we're in now with a real community consensus, the Sentinel has to get on board and get real about stop printing this stuff with needles and people being shot and all these images and lies about how repealing the camping ban will take away the homeless's ability to get jobs. What kind of a sentence is that? That's an opinion, I guess, but I would like to see something.
And what an opinion it is.
What an opinion it is. Anyway, good old Sentinel. Count on them. They're always. I have been waiting for a phone call back from the publisher now. From the editor.
Well, don't go to sleep while you're waiting.
Yeah, I think he needs to realize that this is the newspaper of our community, and that therefore they are a member of the community, and they have to start acting responsibly, and they haven't been. The reporters have been more this year, but the Sentinel itself, the publishing and the editorial page is way out of line with the grand victory that. And in fact, this victory that these progressives had, I now have the statistics from the elections, about 25% of why they won had to do with the green, get out the green vote, not the standard get out the vote for Gray Davis vote, but the special get out the green vote we did. The Greens, for the first time, came out in forces of 77-80%. We traditionally don't think much of elections, only vote about 26%. But because it's been that sleeping ban was up and it's been a part of our platform for over 6 years, you know, we showed up. And so we did elect these council members for this purpose. And Mr. Freitas cannot ride on the glory of whatever it is he did down at Loudon Nelson and think that that's any excuse for him to tell these lies. But I'm not surprised the Sentinel printed it.
Well, listen, thank you very much, David. Is there more you want to tell us?
We got a lot of meetings, folks, I hope Robert's announced the meetings that's scheduled so far. I just got back in the house.
I'll run through them again.
Yeah, and we'll be having a West Side meeting around Delaware probably the 2020.
Well, 427-3772, our radio frequency 96.3 FM. Club Cruise on Tuesday will be having a 7 p.m. show where Ed Fry will be talking about the new Judge Art Danner. Boy, there's a scary one for you. And, of course, his appointment to the district attorneyship, Kate Canlis, quite a grim scene over there in the district attorney's office for those of us who are in favor of civil liberties and want to end the drug war against the poor and against the community. But anyway, again, that's Club Cruise, Channel 71, Tuesday at 7, and then again repeated at Thursday at 7. Be sure to tune into that if you have cable TV, unless you're at City Council. And I encourage you to come down to City Council, which is also happening the same day, either for the afternoon session, which is between starts at 3 and we're going to be talking about the camping ban ordinance and the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban, and whether the police are keeping their word, keeping the directive that was passed that says ticket only on complaint and after warning, which we've gotten at least 20 separate instances of cases where there are either tickets given out without a complaint. Without a warning, or there were people being rousted and moved along without a complaint. That's like from under bridges and so forth, or near the freeway where people wouldn't be complained about, but police were just running their usual roust sessions. In terms of the meetings that are happening, I will again reiterate what we've got going with the meetings. Hope it didn't disappear with... oh, boy. No, I've got it right here. The meeting on Monday is from 4 to 5 in the ABC room. That's of the task force on the camping ban. On Tuesday, as I said, there are two city council meetings, one from starting at 3, the other starting at 7. Come in at 7, you can talk in oral communications. Come in at 3, and you can discuss this Belcher, the police department's behavior on this whole issue. The next day, Wednesday, January 13th, that's 4 days away, from 2 to 5 at Loudon Nelson. Actually, I think that's from 2 to 4 at Loudon Nelson. It says 2 to 5, but it starts at 2. There'll be homeless advocates in room 5, and that includes me and other folks who are concerned about civil liberties. I guess Dave Silva will probably be there. That's January 13th, starting at 2 at Loudon Nelson in room 5. I think it's 2 to 4, actually. And then on Thursday, again, the task force has another meeting, this time on the second floor of the library, the task force to end the camping ban, but they don't call it that. They're just going to look over the camping ban ordinance, or the specific way they phrase it is they are the force to review the camping ban. Again, Thursday, January 14th, 4 to 5, second floor of the library. And then at 7 o'clock, again Thursday night, this might be a rather tempestuous meeting of the downtown neighbors, 7 p.m. Loudon Nelson, room 7. So that's hot stuff coming up. And then on Friday, the Downtown Association, as if the downtown neighbors were not bad enough, that's the Downtown Association, 2 to 4 in the library, second floor, on Friday, January 15th. So if you want to get a copy of what's going on around this, you can check out those of us who occasionally show up to table downtown at New Leaf, and we're looking for volunteers because, frankly, I do not want to put all my money on the city council at this point, much as I would hope that Keith Sugar's and Chris Krohn's lead on this issue, and I believe it is their lead. I don't think it's Catherine Byer's lead. I think it's their lead to take action around the sleeping ban and get it repealed. I hope that it'll be followed. I hope that it'll be carried through. If the mayor cannot even state unequivocally that she opposes the sleeping ban, we're, I think, not in the best of shape. So I'm merely hoping she's being politic. I'm hoping she's being diplomatic. I'm hoping that she will be convinced in the end. But the question whether she has one finger to the wind is really the question. And we have to make sure that the wind tells her the right way to go. And if you can, we really need you to volunteer to help end the sleeping ban. Give a call to Huff, 423-4833. We need people who want a table downtown. And we also need to get this issue of winter shelter, you know, into clear focus. It's not the same issue as the sleeping ban, although the sleeping ban does affect people's ability to make their own shelter, whether it be a car, whether it be a tent, whether it be their sleeping bag. That is their shelter tonight, their housing tonight, what they do tonight. Tonight, not in 2 months in February when the issue is discussed by the City Council, but tonight. And that is the time that the protection is needed, tonight and tomorrow night and the next night. And the thing to do is to call us at 423-HUFF to help provide that protection by putting some pressure, by doing some organizing. There are different groups like Gordon Pusser's committee to try to get some 24-hour bathrooms opened. We hope the one's been opened at the farmer's market, a porta potty anyway, and maybe heading toward a bathroom. And then also the campaign to build, to start a new structure, so there can be some, that's a more long-range project. That's one group that's working on it. Another is Bill Beebe's group, concerned about setting up an internet site on the web around homeless issues, so that that all the information we get can be put on an easily accessible site, at least for those who have access to computers. It would be nice if the library allowed homeless people and more time at that, and returned the word processing capability to those computers, which I understand was ended in November or December, but I could be wrong about that. I want to make a correction to an article that appeared in Street Spirit, if I'm not mistaken. Officer Eboleth complained to me that he wasn't the one who gave the ticket for selling newspapers to Street Spirit vendor Anthony Douglas. Rather, it was Officer Headley, and that, I believe, is probably true. However, he is the one who stood by and made no objection to it. He is the one who came by and harassed Douglas a week or two later, even after Police Chief Belcher had informed, presumably, Eboleth and Headley and all his officers, as I know Chief Belcher diligently does under such circumstances, that giving tickets to people who sell street newspapers is not only unconstitutional, it's not only abusive, it's not only mean-spirited, it's not only a clearly partisan attack on a newspaper that isn't too friendly to the police, and they're trying to control the media here, but it's also illegal under our own Santa Cruz Municipal Code ordinances. That is to say, while it may be illegal to display merchandise, it is not illegal to display a newspaper. That's an exception to 5.42, or is it 5.43? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it is legal, and Officer Eboleth apparently continued his campaign of harassment even after he was told not to do so. So while he may not have given out the citation, and that was an error in our article, he was there, didn't object to it, and continued the campaign of harassment. So I will make that correction, but I want to clarify exactly what happened. You're still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our next broadcaster has not yet come in. Maybe they're going to give us a little extra time. Who knows? I always love extra time. I have in front of me a Street Spirit from 2 years ago, which is very interesting. It has a fine front page article about the Santa Cruz City Council. This is the January 1997 Street Spirit. Santa Cruz City Council silences the public, censors dissent, upholds camping ban. It's kind of an interesting story. It's about what happened when Mike Rotkin cut short a debate on a resolution for a winter shelter emergency law proposed by Scott Kennedy, Celia Scott, and our very own Catherine Byers, now mayor. I'm going to read a little bit from this story, but the point of what I'm reading is really, well, you'll probably catch the point of it. I'm always advised by David Silva, who I too infrequently take his advice. He gives very good advice most of the time. He's advised me to stop giving my conclusions first, but rather to present the evidence and then let the evidence lead you, the listeners, to the conclusions. And I think that's an excellent suggestion. I'm going to read a little bit of the story and see if you can imagine what the conclusions here are. Before I'll begin the story, I will mention that on December 8th, this last year, not one council member mentioned the need for increased shelter this winter. That there was no mention at all of needing to either increase shelter or suspend the camping ban for the winter in order to deal with the shelter crisis. That was in 1998. Now we go back to 1996 and we hear what the same Catherine Byers and Celia Scott and the rest of the council were saying. The Santa Cruz City Council adopted a new policy on homelessness at its December 10th meeting, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. At that session, three city council members proposed a modification of the Santa Cruz camping ban law. Following on the heels of the extreme pressure of a 7.5-month City Hall sleepers protest, discussion of these mild proposals would have been the first time that the City Council considered the effect of a sleeping ban in relation to the lack of shelter space for the homeless. But such a discussion was not to be. Santa Cruz Vice Mayor Celia Scott introduced the proposal, stating, "The basic thrust of this proposal is to create an exception to the camping ordinance in the case of winter shelter emergency. Winter is the most difficult time for those who do not have shelter." Scott proposed lifting the ban on camping in the event shelter space is lacking. She documented the current severe shortage in shelter beds by saying that 428 beds countywide, the number of beds listed in the county continuum of care document, is erroneous, so the total emergency shelter beds is 229. Scott challenged former mayor and council member Mike Rutkin's oft-repeated statement that the city of Santa Cruz spends more money per capita on the homeless than any other city of its size in the nation. She refuted Rutkin's claim with evidence which showed San Francisco spends $54 per capita on homeless programs, Santa Monica $16 per capita, and Santa Cruz only $4 per capita if only city funding is considered. Scott explained, "The city of Santa Cruz does spend more than any other incorporated city in the county, approximately 2% of the total $8.1 million or $200,000. So while we are doing well, I don't think we are actually out in front across the nation. That is not to demean the services that we provide, but on a per capita expenditure basis, we are not spending an unusual amount of money." Homeless observer Patrick Ring commented with dry wit, "Maybe it was a typo. Rutkin read most per capita spent on the homeless in the country, and it was actually the county." Vice Mayor Scott continued, "The idea is simply to allow council, under emergency conditions, to claim an exemption to the camping ban ordinance. I think of it as a situation wherein we have no room at the inn. It troubles my conscience personally to be giving people tickets for camping when there would be no shelter in the city of Santa Cruz for them, and I hope our moral compass has not gone so far astray that we cannot think of this in humanitarian terms and recognize that it is creating a possibility in a future emergency to act in a manner which would allow people who have no other options to not be given a ticket if they sleep out of doors." Following Scott's presentation, Councilmember Catherine Byers opted to wait to speak on the merits of the proposal until after members of the public had a chance to speak. But this was not to be. Councilmember and ex-mayor Mike Rutkin responded first by condemning the proposal. "I'm really troubled by the proposal in front of us because I believe it doesn't have any substance. I think we'll be beaten up regularly by Robert Norris and others after we're done with it because it doesn't actually open up a camping area. It doesn't actually solve the difficult question of where that camping area will be." Then, without any further discussion, Rutkin moved to table the motion. It was immediately seconded, a vote was taken, and the council voted 4-3 to table the item. Rutkin had effectively squelched any debate on the camping ban. Audience members were appalled and loudly voiced their outrage, shouting, "Recall, and it makes you look like an idiot. That's why you want to table it. To allow no discussion is an absolute tragedy of the democratic process," Vice Mayor Scott objected with loud audience support. "Absolutely," added Byers. "Can we say fascist?" Robert Norris commented. Ah, there I am using the word fascist. My goodness. Continuing this story, we're reading a story from Street Spirit called "Public is Silenced in Santa Cruz." Audience members continue to voice their frustration, saying, "Thanks a lot, Rutkin. Makes a mockery of democracy, democracy Santa Cruz style. Where's the chains and locks?" someone asked, in reference to the September 10th council meeting in which seven people chained themselves to the banisters to protest the sleeping ban. Homeless activist Sherry Connable, obviously upset, said, "I observed a very unusual process. Usually when something is brought forth on the agenda, the first thing that happens is the mayor invites members of the public to come forward and make whatever comments they want to make. She, Mayor Cynthia Matthews, went by that part of the process and allowed Mr. Rutkin to present a 5-minute dissertation on his objections to what was being discussed. It was the most embarrassing manipulation of the democratic process I've ever seen in city council chambers. They had clearly figured out what they could do so that this would not have to be publicly discussed. It brought the council completely apart. Scott Kennedy left before there was a formal recess. Celia left before there was a formal recess because she's so upset by this manipulation of the democratic process. They squashed all debate, Connable charged. They figured out a technicality of process and how votes are taken so that they could manipulate this so no further discussion would be had, except that Mr. Rotkin got to make his 5-minute speech full of the usual errors and misinterpretations that he continues to put in front of the public of Santa Cruz and gets away with. And I hope that if nothing else, the media noticed that Councilmember Scott had done her homework and had finally disavowed this long-upheld myth that Santa Cruz as a city spends more money per capita on the homeless than any other city in the United States. We're actually low down on the list in terms of how many dollars we spend. I hope that Mr. Rotkin and anyone else who continues to hold that up will quit it, because they're obviously wrong and they're manipulating public perception in order to get support for their own prejudice and their own misinformation. While Vice Mayor Scott's proposals were only hypothetical, in the past, a shelter emergency has twice been declared in Santa Cruz, first in 1990 and again in 1995. The city council had a declared shelter crisis, which already exists. To look only at persons in the ISSP and armory shelters as comprising the population seeking shelter is very misleading. Couples, persons with animals, teenage boys, those with respiratory conditions, those who despise an impersonal conveyor belt style to shelter, intoxicated individuals, and even working homeless people whose schedule does not fit the rigid hours of the armory are all not counted, but their shelter needs are as real as anyone's. Another unusual occurrence took place at the 7 p.m. session. At the 7 p.m. council session, which was the later session after this earlier session that Rotkin did his coup, the first 30 minutes are designated for oral communications from the public on items not appearing on the agenda. Councilmember Catherine Byers got up from her council seat and took a place in line with the public to speak to her fellow council members as a member of the public. Earlier today, I'm sad to say, I witnessed the most blatant silencing of the public, Byers lamented. I am embarrassed by it and obviously upset by it. I know for sure the reason people didn't want to debate is because they didn't want to hear from those people, Byers charged, referring to Councilmember Michael Hernandez's remarks earlier that day about those people. Byers told her fellow elected officials, if you make choices on who you want to hear from and those you don't want to hear from, how do you ever choose other than silencing the repressed, the unimpressed, or those who don't impress you? Byers urged the council to reschedule the item and discuss it fully. Homeless activist Robert Norris spoke next. A shelter crisis threatens the life and safety, to say nothing of the dignity and rights, of hundreds of people. But what is that next to the ego of Rotkin's agenda? This agenda will tolerate no public debate, even from council members who have often been his allies. If Hernandez, Campbell, Rotkin, and Matthews choose to close down democratic options at city council, we must do what other people are doing and reclaim those rights. In Chiapas and Jalisco, women and men are rejecting at great personal risk the political regime which has deserted them. We must take our civil rights struggle to the streets. Councilmember Scott Kennedy also left his seat, stood in line with the public, and spoke at the mic as a citizen. This afternoon, in my mind, a majority of council members used the parliamentary maneuver not only to end the debate they thought had gone on too long, but to prevent a debate before it had a chance to start. It was disappointing, it was contemptuous toward the public, and it was disrespectful to other council members. There is a moral dilemma, and the dilemma is what happens when and if there is a lack of shelter. I wish we could talk about it at council. The editorial in the Santa Cruz County Sentinel the next day called Kennedy, Byers, and Scott sore losers, but failed to mention a word about the shelter crisis the council members were addressing. The oft-repeated phrase that abolishing or limiting the camping ban would result in the homeless camping everywhere was repeated by the Sentinel, in spite of the fact that neither Vice Mayor Scott's proposal nor homeless activists have ever advocated such a position. It is a human right to sleep somewhere, and that is the issue, not the fabrication that people will then sleep everywhere. The editorial demonstrates the Sentinel's willingness to needlessly arouse fears in the housed population about perceived threats by the homeless. Contacted a few hours afterwards, City Attorney John Barasoni, who had held the tabling position action legal at the council meeting, confirmed that no similar tabling had happened within his term in the 1990s in cases involving a divided council. He added that tabling of non-controversial matters was routine. Councilmember Byers, after studying Robert's Rules of Parliamentary Procedure, reported that the rules clearly state that a tabling action is never meant to silence minority opinion. Those wishing to register public comment are encouraged to call the City Council and leave a voicemail message at 429-3550. as to a public debate on the camping ban issue, perhaps hell must first freeze over. Well, that's the article by Becky Johnson in the January 1997 issue of Street Spirit. What interests me about that article are several things, actually three things. The first is, and the most obvious, is that this council was, some of the members, Kennedy, Byers, and Scott, expressed concern about winter shelter emergencies. And yet, what did Catherine Byers have to say about a winter shelter emergency when she had the votes in December of this last year, 2 years later? Nothing. Not a word. She did say she was going to talk about the camping ban in February. She did ask the police not to issue tickets except under warning and after a complaint, which the police say is what they already do. And she did cut off at the knees Keith Sugar's recommendation of a health and safety concern, and she did remove covering up with blankets from Chris Crone's resolution that sleeping is a basic human right. So, to the casual observer, it might appear that Catherine Byers had shifted in some way to the right on this issue. That is to say, that she no longer felt it was necessary to take any action during the winter. Shelter was not necessary. Everything was fine. Or if not fine, there was nothing that was to be done. Or there was nothing she wanted to do. Or at least it wasn't worth discussing on the agenda. Wasn't worth special sessions. Wasn't worth an additional session. Wasn't worth appropriating money on. This is the same session where there had been $250,000 appropriated for police, computers, and furniture. Now, I've been accused of attacking Byers in some sort of personal way for doing nothing and actually muzzling and shooting down Councilmember Sugar on December 8th. I think that that's an unfair characterization. I'm not attacking her personally. I am simply stating that she seems to have retreated from a position that she took 2 years before, which had to do with establishing a winter shelter emergency. So that's the first point I want to make. The second point has to do with a sort of a subtle thing. Celia Scott and Scott Kennedy, both for their own reasons, left after their attempt to bring up an item on the agenda was muzzled by Mike Rotkin under the mayorship of Cynthia Matthews. If one more person had left the council, it would not have been able to have a quorum. Guess who that person was? Yes, Catherine Byers. Had Byers had the desire, she could have stopped the council meeting, in essence saying, if you're not going to allow democracy, we're going to stop this process here until you are. She chose not to do that. She's a team player. I don't want to say any more on that, but the point has to be made. Point three, while there was some brave noises made by Kennedy and Scott and Byers at the public mic, this is the first time, I think, in history that sitting council members have actually spoken from the mic at oral communication because they were not allowed to speak on the issue from their chairs by Mike Rotkin. Even though brave noises were made and good statements were made, a month later, the same Catherine Byers declined to, in essence, take any real action further to raise the issue again. Not only the issue of homeless rights and the issue of freezing situations in winter and lack of shelter, but the issue of democracy at City Council. So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have to have a balanced understanding and perception of what Councilmember Byers, now Mayor Byers, is up to, what her history has been, what she's doing now. And it's not fair to say that, you know, that there isn't a real process in action, that there's an endless, I mean, there's a great number of meetings being proposed around the sleeping ban and the larger camping ordinance. There is. But if she can't even commit herself to ending the sleeping ban, and she couldn't even sign the repeal ordinance last year, she wouldn't do that, I really have some serious questions. And I think it's appropriate for us to ask those questions of Catherine Byers, and more important, of the three council members who are supposed to represent the new trend, who are to be to the left of Byers, who are the 63% mandate from the voters. And I don't think I'm being a turd in the punch bowl to say this. I think that this is an obvious question, particularly obvious to folks who are freezing outside at night and continuing to getting ticketed and harassed by police who are just sort of breezing by Byers' little statement on December 8th, which obviously isn't having significant impact on the police, that they ticket only on warning and after complaint. But that's it for me today, because the little red hen is pecking at my nose here, and I've got to get out of here, and I'd like to thank her for giving me the extra 15 minutes to read you that article from Street Spirit. And we're going to go out on Carol Denny's oft-played but beautiful song from her album Failure to Disperse called Getting Ready for Christmas. And please, come to the City Council Task Force tomorrow and join me again at Bathrop Spears Broadside, 6 o'clock on Thursday on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Thanks.
This town puts up decorations right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations to people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, lean on the wall, you cannot stand in a doorway, you cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something.
Skin mashed and boxed into uniform blocks, then covered in breadcrumbs from collar to socks, and